And all of a sudden, all the people are wearing white, and the towels over their head. They're in the middle of strange places in the davening. They're in the middle of this long, like, oh, it's Hoshana Rabbah. And then suddenly you realize, it's Hoshana Rabbah, and everything's good. What it was, I don't think I had any idea. Understandable, because the Torah makes no mention of Hoshana Rabbah, but instead, because Hoshana Rabbah means a lot. In the bigger picture of Judaism. So I want to use the shiur tonight to think a little bit about Hoshana Rabbah, not in a vacuum, but most importantly in its place, where it really is, between Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret. And I'm going to use a term that already gives certain direction to that place as a transition. It makes sense in between the two. What I'd like to do is begin by identifying the salient features of Hoshana Rabbah and Shmini Atzeret, the 2 days that are coming up, to try and at least notice them and ask questions about understanding them. And then we'll try and take a few steps back and understand, in light of what we're finishing, what we're supposed to be going through now, what we're supposed to be leading to. So let's begin with Hoshana Rabbah. Mishnayot, in the fourth parak of Sukkah, have a lengthy discussion of the things that went on this day. Mishnayot called the day Yom Ha'aravah. Russian called this day Yom Hoshana, or Yom Hoshana Rabbah, which is where the name comes from in Russian. But the Mishnah tells us two very important things. Number one, if you're looking in Mishnah 8, it says that there was a place in Yerushalayim called Motza, you know the places today, they would go there and collect Aravos, Uvayim v'zokzin otan v'tzidei Mizbeach. They would come and stand them up at the side of the Mizbeach, and the tops of the Arab, as you know this, they would be leaning over, kafuf, on top of the Mizbeach. We're also told, interestingly, taku v'heriu v'taku. They would do this ceremony together with the blowing of shofar, chatzotro. That's very interesting that this would go on. That's the first thing we know about the mitzvah of the Arab. The second thing we know is we're told about hakafuf. Every day of Sukkot, people would walk around the Mizbeach one time and say, Ana Hashem Oshiyana, Ana Hashem Atzlichana, or Rabbi Yehuda says, they would say, Ani Vahu Oshiyana, whatever that means, the Otoayom. And on the seventh day, Mekifin et HaMizbeach Sheva Pam. So we hear two things about what they would do with the Arab. The first is Zekifa. It would be Zokin Otan Mitzidem Mizbeach, and the second is Mekifin Etam Mizbeach. They would do what we call today HaKofot. Now today, of course, we don't have it in Mizbeach. What do we walk around? All of Sukkot, and particularly on Hoshana Rabbah, we walk around the Sefer Torah. If you look at the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, the next sources, they talk about how we use the Sefer Torah, the beam of the Beit Knesset, Zeicha LeMikdash. It isn't some minhag like it is on Simchas Torah. It's a real halacha from the Mishnah. We are commemorating what they did as a central part of Sukkot. If you take a look at the Gemara on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Bet, there's an interesting question about what they would use for these hakafot. So Rabbi Lazar says they would use the lulav, but Rabbi Shmuel Bar Natan says in the name of Rabbi Chanina that they would use the arava. They would walk around the Mizbeach not the way we do today, all 7 days with the lulav and the araminim. They would use only the arava. And the truth is, we say this in the piyus that we say in the Hoshana. Kel shata soze mizbeach, om se arava lahakif mizbeach. Carrying, labored down, burdened down by the arava as they circle the mizbeach. What you see here is that there was some unique role of the arava. It's the arava that they were soaking by the mizbeach. The arava that, according to many, they would walk around in his mouth with him. And this is very surprising. Because if you had to single out one of the meanings to used for something. The last one you'd think you would choose would be the arrow. Essentially, if you look at the psukim in the Torah, each one of the arva minim is described in a way that teaches you a little bit about what it needs to be. For example, the etrog is called priyei sadar. What do we learn from this? It needs to be hadar, old halachot. Kapot marim, we learn it has to be tied, it has to be together. For each of the anafei tzavot, three leaves on each level. What do we learn from arve nachal? The answer is nothing. There are no halachos of an arava. It all has to be is something that grew as an arava. Children come to me there and say, okay, Abba, what do you look for in the arava? The real answer is you look that it's not stolen. But besides that, it's not halachos arava, all the meaning. There's no halachos. All the things we talk about are signs to know that it really is an arava, right? The shape of the leaf. But that's not a halacha, even if the leaves are ripped off. The arava is kosher. So interesting that we're going to choose this min to represent the dalet minim in any way. And of course, on a midrashic level, look at the bottom of page 1, moving on to page 2, we know Chazal spoke about how each one of the minim represented a different part of the Jewish people. The adasim are the Jews that have reach but not tam. They have maisim tovim but not Torah. Right? The lulav is the reverse. The etrog are people that have Torah and maisim tovim. And what are the aravos? Bottom of page 1, Eli Yisrael. That don't have mice and tovim and don't have Torah. This is what we're choosing again to do this whole ceremony in the Mikdash. It's very surprising. It's also interesting if you look at the top of page 2, that if you look carefully at the halachos the Gemara discusses regarding this arava, the arava that was taken separately in the Mikdash, it stresses that it's different than the arava that was taken as part of the lulav. Second source on page 2, then Dalet and Beis, the Gemara says, "Ve'ena nitala ela b'shnei aksma." It must be taken on its own, without the rest of the meaning. "Ve'ein adam yotzei yedei chovato ba'arava shemalulav." Maybe you can have some wise guy, cheap Jew, who's going to say, "Okay, I have to take that rubber out. I'll take the lulav, and then I'll take that rubber out, and I'll carry that rubber." No, it has to be separate arabas, not just so people can sell at night in the roba. Seven shekel now. See, I was wondering how they're going to make the jump. Because for years it was five shekels. Five shekels easy, you have five shekels.
Ten.
Meaning to go to ten.
It's ten.
Not ten.
They're ten.
Ah, ten. Seven. Seven. Yeah. I was wondering how they were going to do it. They were going to go to ten. But they would try seven first.
I got
two. Guys, look around with the seven people. What I recommend is when they tell you ten, you say, no, that's not ten. It's seven, right? And they'll say, well, no, it's not me. I'm selling to someone. I have to sell for ten. No, it's not to someone. It's just your unlucky day. I mean, we all know it's not the three shekel. It's the principle. Because we are the yeshiva. We will spend money to go to Meir Shari and walk from store to store and waste hours to get a safer for one shekel less. That is the principle. It's not the time, it's not the money. It's that safer doesn't cost that much. The rubbers do not cost that. They don't even cost seven, to tell you the truth. But no, anyone who buys for 10 should be embarrassed. You're letting us all down. Okay, we're all making a pact. Nobody spends 10. And if you already spend 10, you go back. You're talking to your yeshiva, these are rubbers on bus. But if you're not a lover, if you're not a lover, you only spend the 10 checker. Getting back to what we were talking about. Ain't not in the Yotzi, a day of Chavato, but a rubbish of a lulav. In fact, the Gemara asks, it's special, why does it have to be repeated twice? Now what's interesting also is to look at the shear. The Gemara says, first line is what we were just reading, Arava Tzarich HaShear, it needs a minimum amount. What's the minimum amount? The Rambam writes, after he summarizes that needs to be different than the lulav, he says, V'shiura, afilu ale echad bivad echad. Even one leaf on the whole stalk. That's a kosher Arava for this. That's pretty lame. The point is the arava was so minimal, especially the one that was taken in the mikdash. Tosos explains that this is why, even though it was lulavim, when they would all bring them to the mikdash, they had to remember who was whose, right? Because you had to be lochem, and they would do a special stipulation, like a kinyan, whoever takes it, it'll be it. But the arava, they didn't do this. Why? Didn't have to be lochem. Didn't have to be your own. Keep seeing all these very strong leniencies. That's why the Ramah summarizes the halacha. That when you take the arava, when you do the hakafos, it's better not to take it with the lulav. That's why some of the custom, I had the custom when I was in before the morning, we would do the Hoshanas with the Lulav, and then I do Hoshanas with the Arabas. The Arabas says that that's the right way to do it. With the Arabas alone, you take the Arabas, and you walk around with the Arabas. So first of all, we saw again the Zakifa and the Akafa. I want to go back to the Mishnah now and focus on the seventh day. So the first thing you see back in Mishnah Gimel is that it says, back in Mishnah Aleph already, Lulav v'arava, the mitzvah of Lulav and the mitzvah of Arava could be Shisha or Shiva. Could be 6 days or 7 days. What does it depend upon? Mishnah Gimel elaborates on Arava. Arava Shiva Ketzad. Yom Shvi Shal Arava Shechaliot B'Shabbat, Arava Shiva. I want you to understand this. All the other days in the Mikdash, if Shabbat came out that day, they would not take the Arava, just like we don't take the Lulav on Shabbat. There's a Gzeir. But if Hoshana Arava came out on Shabbat, it was Docha Shabbat. He had Shofar, not Docha Shabbat. Kriyat HaMegillah, not Docha Shabbat. Lulav, not Docha Shabbat. The Arava, Docha Shabbat. It's pretty impressive as far as understanding the significance of this action. In fact, going back to the bottom of the page, we'll come back to the Mishnayos in a second. The Baitusim, you know, those Torah Shabbat Pleh rejectors, they disagree. Chazal on this understandable why. It's only Yom HaRosh. It doesn't mention anywhere in the Torah. It's not that it's the Shabbos. It talks about how they were trying to hide the Arabos. They would steal them. There was all kinds of stuff going on. You understand why they disagree? We want to understand where we come from. After the Furba, we're told last source on page 2, Yerushalmi said to Rabbi Simon, would tell those who were setting the calendar, which at the time they were still setting it, it wasn't set yet, to make sure that Hoshana Rabbah did not fall on Shabbat, because they didn't want to not do the Arabah. And they were responded to and told, V'in itchakin, abdin t'kiyosav lo t'abdin arabah. We don't have to worry about Hoshana Rabbah falling on Shabbat, because if it does, we'll do it anyway. Continuing with this concept, the top of page 3, the Ravid explains that this is why Lo Adu Rosh, I don't know if you know that, Lo Adu Rosh means that Rosh Hashanah, once the calendar was set, they set it so that it will never fall out on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. Lo Adu Aleph Dalvav Rosh. Why? Says the Ravid, Yishum Yom HaRavah Shelo Yavo B'Shabbat. Because if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Yom Rishon, Rosh Hashanah will be on Shabbat, we won't let that happen. Again, I mean, this sounds like a very serious thing. Not what we're used to assuming, you know. Yom HaRavah is very important. Continuing along with the Mishlei, back on page 1. Mishlei talks about, I mentioned this before, how on the seventh day, they wouldn't circle the Mizbeach one time. They would circle the Mizbeach 7 times. Where did this come from? Yerushalmi says on page 3 that it was definitely Yericho. I understand the linkage. Yericho, they also circled 7 times. But the obvious question is, my Indian Arabos Yericho. Of course, the third question we could throw in here is, what else do we circle 7 times? Chuppah. Maybe we could try and answer and explain that too. What's the relationship between Arabos and the Mizbeach and Yericho? Continue on the Mishnah. Mishnah Vav. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that they used to bang the Arabos on the ground or other things. He's talking about Charei Shadeka. We do it with Arava itself. Maybe we hold up the Tanakama held that Chabata was done with the Arabos. Here we see all these customs. The point I'm trying to show you is it doesn't come from the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnayot, the Masechet Sukkah. There's a whole lengthy discussion about the Arava in general and about particularly Hoshana Rabbah. This is the first facet of Hoshana Rabbah that we need to be familiar with, Yom HaArav. The second facet is, which I heard Rabbi Yehuda spoke about a little bit earlier, and maybe some of you have heard a little bit about it, the concept of Yom HaDin. Now people hear Yom HaDin, they're like, enough. We had Rosh Hashanah, we had Yom Kippur, what's this Hoshana Rabbah? But it's already mentioned in the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi mentions here on page 3, says, Oti Yom Yom Yidroshun, Zot Yab Arava. This refers to the day when we blow the shofar, and the day when we do the Arava. The fact that Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaRavah put together is very interesting. And in fact, we saw earlier in the Mishnayot that when they used to take the Arava, they would also blow the shofar. Remember? The Zohar, I don't think it begins with the Zohar, it begins with the Yerushalmi, but the Zohar says that on the seventh day of Chag, Who siyuma de dina de alma? It's the end of the din for the world. Who pitki nafkin mi be malach? But this is where the concept comes from. This is when the peteks are sent out from the king. This is where the good the kvittel, good the petek, and the petek tov. This is where it comes from. Now there's a little bit of discussion exactly how the petek process works. But there's another Zohar below which seems to talk about it ending on Shmini Atzeret. Shana is when the petek's released. Shmini Atzeret goes into effect. I don't know how interested we are in the paper good paper trail here. But we are interested in what this is all supposed to mean for us. This is why there are many minhagim brought down on the Shulchan Aruch that associate Hoshana Rabbah with Yom Kippur. Shulchan Aruch writes it beferish. You look, for example, towards the end of the Shulchan Aruch here, it talks about how Marvim Tzat Neirot, Mobi Yom Kippur. Some people have a minute to go to the mikvah. Mobi Yom Kippur, wearing the kittel, Mobi Yom Kippur. The obvious question is, what exactly is the place of Hoshana Rabbah within this framework of Yom Kippur? Just in passing, I really only want to do this in passing, there were all kinds of spooky things that went on with the Jewish people because of Hoshana Rabbah being a Yom Din. I'll give you one example, because according to the Ramos, I see y'all getting excited, he probably knows what I'm talking about. He doesn't. He's ready. In any case, the Ramos says, it's in the Ramos Alachim, Chasvar Rishonim, right in the middle, that there's a simon based on the shade of the moon on the Hoshana Rabbah, you can know what's going to happen to you that year. Like, where does all this mystic of Hoshana Rabbah come from? There's also an interesting discussion in the Shulchan Aruch itself about the exact relationship between Hoshana Rabbah and Yomim Tovim. Shulchan Aruch begins here, and on Hoshana Rabbah we're knowing to say the Mizmorik and Sukkot and Zimrik and Obi Yomtiv. On the other hand, the Rabbah adds in the very next line, now you don't say Nishmat Kolchai. Why not? The Gemara refers us here on the bottom of page 3 to the Rashbam and Tzachim. Rabbi Tzachim explains that we say Nishmat on Yom Tiv, that we don't have the Bisamim, we go from Shabbat to Yom Tiv, because Yom Tiv also has an Neshama Yisera. That's why we don't mean Bisamim in Abdullah from Shabbat to Yom Tiv, and that's why we say Nishmat on Yom Tiv. So what's the Grush trying to see truth? That I guess from Hoshana Rabbah, we don't have an Neshama Yisera. So what does that mean? What does it mean that on the one hand it's like a Yom Tiv, we say Pesukim to Zimra of Yom Tiv? On the other hand, we don't say Nishmat because we don't have Neshama Yisera. So what is it? What is Hoshana Rabbah? So after speaking about Hoshana Rabbah, I want to move forward and look at some of the unique facets of Shmini Atzeret. Then we'll take a step back and try and explain both Shmini Atzeret and Hoshana Rabbah as they transition from Sukkot. So let's look now at Shmini Atzeret. The Gemara says in Sukkot Daf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, top of page 4, that Shmini Atzeret is a regel b'fnei atzmo. Its own rega. Gemara quotes 6 ways that it's its own rega. Hazer kshav. These 6 letters stand for 6 things that the Gemara discussed here that were different in Shmini Atzeret from Sukkot itself. If you look carefully at the discussion of the Karbanos Musaf that we read each day of Sukkot, you note that moving from the 5th day to the 6th day and the 6th day to the 7th day, and really from the 1st and 2nd, 2nd to 3rd and 3rd to 4th, each day begins Uva Yom HaShvi. Uvayom HaShishi. How does Shmini Atzeret begin? Not U, but Bayom. It's a new beginning. And of course, one of the points the Gemara makes, Kuf, the carbon of Shmini Atzeret, is very different than Sukkot. Each day of Sukkot, we had an alternating number of Parim, but 2 Elim and 14 Kvasim. What do we have on Shmini Atzeret? Pasuk Lamed Vav. Only 1 Par. Only 1 aisle, and only 7 kvasim. What's interesting, by the way, is you look below at the diagram, the contrast. On Pesach and Shavuot, we had 2 parim, 1 aisle, and 7 kvasim, both Pesach and Shavuot. On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we have 1 par, 1 aisle, and 7 kvasim. Which one is Shmini Atzeret like? Meaning the justification for connecting Hoshana Rabbah and Shmini Atzeret to Yom Din, we have already in the Torah from the fact that the Karbon is like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. By the way, how does Sukkot relate to all of these days? For example, how many Kfasim were brought on every Yom Tov but Sukkot? 7. How many were brought each day of Sukkot? 14. How many Elim were brought on every Yom Tov? All 4. 1. How many on Sukkot? Being Sukkot was double every other Yom Tov, which is because it's shy of the two frameworks of Yom Tov. Sukkot is shy of the framework of the Shalosh Regalim, and it's shy of the framework of the Yom Tov of the seventh month. It completes both. That's why it's Kabbalah is a double. The Harim is a wild card, and that, of course, Chazal deal with. Shmini Atzeret is not shy of the month. Shmini Atzeret is only shy of the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I mentioned Chidush. Some of you may have heard me say this before. I mentioned Chidush that I noticed for the first time this year, and no one had ever heard me say it, but I'd never said it. You hear me say it?
Yeah.
Everyone knows this everyone knows. That Sukkot in one description, then the summary of the Moed, and then it starts again after Hamishah Tariyot. But I noticed for the first time this year, you can take a look at it, is that the first time it says, when it introduces Sukkot, Bachodesh Hashvi'i Hazeh, the 15th of the month. Read it inside, because I'm reading inside, people believe you. I'm going to say, I'm going to make it up. It says in Parak of Gimel, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Abraham Bnei Yisrael Lemor, B'chamishah Asar Yom, Lachodesh Hashvi'i Hazeh, Chag HaSukkot, Shivat Yomim LaShem. Right? Second time it starts like this. Ah, b'chamishah asar yom l'chodesh hashvi'i b'aspechem et fu'aspechem. It doesn't say, you know what? The first description of Sukkot is shy to the two that came before, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So it's l'chodesh hashvi'i. The second one isn't shy to these Yom Tovim. It's really connected to the Shalosh. That doesn't say shvi'i hazeh. And what's interesting is that Shmini Atzeret is only mentioned the first time, not the second time. Because Shmini Atzeret is only shayach to Chodesh Hashvi'i Hazeh. In any case, getting back to what we were discussing, on the one hand, therefore, one would feel justified in saying Shmini Atzeret is a total own thing. In fact, if you look at the next source, Sefer Dvarim, when Sukkot is mentioned there, it doesn't even mention the 8 days. It only mentions the 7 days. That's why the generally accepted mussar of what we say on Shmini Atzeret in this field is B'yom Shmini Chag Atzeret Hazeh. Some of the Siddur, you'll notice here, has Chag Hazeh. They're really originally two Nusos. The Nusos that most people say is Shmini Chag Atzeret Hazeh. Nothing to do with Sukkot. But there's another Nusos that says, you have to have each one a different. B'yom Hashmini B'yom Yom Shmini Atzeret HaChag Hazeh. You take out the Chag that's in between. Which means that it's connected to? And clearly it's very hard to disassociate Shmini Atzeret from Sukkot totally. Very hard to do this. First of all,
the
strongest linkage is the fact that it's the 8th day. It's right after Sukkot. And that's how the Rabbi helped describe Shmini Atzeret. It was the bottom of the page for us. It's referred to as Yom Tov HaAcharon Shel Chag. Yom Tov HaAcharon Shel Chag. In fact, if you look back at the top of page 4, Mishnah mentions Mem Chesed Aleph. The mitzvahs of Halal and Simcha are all 8 days, including Yom Tov HaAcharon Shel Chag. Marianne, how do we know? Because the Torah, when it talks about Simcha, says, Yismach L'Fnei Hashem Elokeichem, Shivat Yom Tov. How do you know the Simcha on the 8th day? Mar says, "Menani b'zivet haner rabbanon, ve'ahita ach sameach l'rabo le'le yotav achron." Meaning, we're learning from a pasuk that describes the 7 days that there's a mitzvah of simcha on Shmini Atzeret. How can you disassociate Shmini Atzeret from Sukkot? There are many more halachos. If you look on page 5, for example. Mishnah Chagiga tells us someone who does not have a chance to bring the Korban Chagiga on the beginning of Yom Tov, the mitzvah of Chagiga on every Regel, can bring it the whole Regel and Yom Tov Avon Shel Chag. You can do Tashlumin. You can do Tashlumin for Sukkot for Shmini Atzeret. In fact, the Rosh Hashanah sees this as somewhat conflicting with the concept of Tazrik Shav. Because how can you say Shemir is regular to Shmini Regel Keatmo, leading Tashlumin Dibri Akol Tashlumin Derishon, who the Gemara itself already limits what it's saying based on it. Rashi has a very interesting formulation in Pesachim for the concept of Simcha on Shmini Atzeret. he seems to understand that from Vehita Asameach L'Rabba of Yom Tov Ha'achron Shachag, Leila Yom Tov Ha'achron Shachag, it's only Leila Yom Tov. Simcha is only at night, because it's the night after Sukkot, not during the day. Which would explain why we make such a big deal the night of Shmini Atzeret of Simchat Torah. Continuing with this, Rashi, when he tries to explain why it's a regel of Sne Atmo, Rashi says, in what way is this its own regel? What is the mitzvot of this regel, Shmini Atzeret? She'en Yoshvim B'Sukkah. Shmini Atzeret is a little bit like God. We only know what it's not. Meaning, Shmini Atzeret is its own regel because we're not sitting in the Sukkah. That's why, by the way, many of you may be used to, may be wondering, many of you from Putzfars, how many of you, if you remember, sat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret? A lot of people do, there's interesting customs with that. You should know, it's a real tension, you can see in the postkin, between Sveik of the Yoma and the identity of Shmini Atzeret as not being in the Sukkah. But it's a big problem. That's why how many of you did not sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, even in Putzfars? That's why. Because Shmini Atzeret is defined by not sitting in the Sukkah. That's why many posts can say that even those who keep second day, you know, of Yom Tov in Israel, you shouldn't sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. That's the nature. You should do whatever your rabbi tells you. Rashi says, the nature of regular Sabbath is you don't sit in the Sukkah. So how can you say that Shmini Atzeret is not connected to the Sukkah? This whole identity is based on not sitting in the Sukkah. What does that mean? Let's just end off the question section regarding Shmini Atzeret by talking about how Chazal said about its identity. Chazal explained the Gemara in Sukkot Achronei with this, that as opposed to the 70 Purim of Sukkot that are brought connected to 70 nations of the world, Shmini Atzeret is only one part, and it's brought to parallel the Umma Yechid of the Jewish people. Mashal Melech Basavadah, who says to his servants, make a big suda for me. And on the last day he said to his avo, to his loved one, Aseli Suda Ketana, make me a smaller suda now, alone, Kedisha En, and so that I can have privacy with you as opposed to the 70 of a Sukkot. Shmini Atzeret is the Jewish people. Sukkot is the yontov of all the nations. Shmini Atzeret is the yontov of the Jewish people. Rashi has an interesting formulation of this medrash in Gemara. From the words Atzereti, Rashi explains, Atzarti etchem etzli, I've held you back with me, like a melech who invited his children, different than Rashi's children as opposed to loved ones, through it through the third amount of days. When the time comes for them to leave, he says to his children, do me a favor, stay with me one more day, because kasha alive predat tesh. Hard to separate. That sounds very nice, but the obvious question is, eventually you're going to separate. Well, stay one more day. What is God like, sentimental? He always thinks, you know, we're all men. We have no sentiment for anything. You're at the airport, you're going to Israel, right? See your mother's hugging you, and you know, one more picture, one more hug, and then you walk into the passport like, hey, wave! Make sure when you go back, you turn around one more time and wave. Maybe it's just when I was a kid and before they had cell phones, you know. You can call you six times before you get on the plane. Turn around one more time and wave! Let's say we turn around one more time and wave. Then I'm not going to go. And you're thinking the whole time, I want to get room in the overhead bin, like, you know, these supplies are not helping me. I want to get on the plane. So what's the whole deal about what I did up? What are we gaining? The goal tonight is not just to ask questions, but I think these questions are key in getting a good sense of what we're supposed to be thinking about on Shmini Atzeret and on Rosh Hashanah. So let's begin by taking a step back. And one more point that I should make before doing so is, of course, Simchat Torah. Simchat Torah is something that made a lot of sense in Chutz Laaretz because Shmini Atzeret is a yomtiv where there are no mitzvah. So a yomtiv where you do nothing for one day is hard, you know, it's hard. But imagine a yomtiv where you do nothing for 2 days. Judaism wore the battle. And Simchat Torah found its way. Now the question is, what does it have to do with what's going on? So what's the linkage, of course, Simchat Torah to Shmini Atzeret to Hoshana Rabba in particular? What do we do on Simchat Torah that's similar? Do a kofa. So clearly they were building off of the model of Sukkot, in particular Hoshana Rabba, with the seven akof. And the question is, what's the connection? And of course, what's the connection is to finishing the Torah, to reading the Zotav Rabba. Like I said before, let's take a step back. And I believe the step back will be helpful in understanding Sukkot, Shana Rabba, and Shmini Atzeret. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, of course, a time when a person is meant to retreat within himself, do a chesed and nefesh, slow down, humility, take an account of the things they do and whether they're correct, whether a person is living their lives correctly. And naturally, this introspection can lead, if a person is internalized, to a shrinking of soul. I think a good expression of this is a number of lines we say in the tefillah of the Yom. For example, say in tefillah Daka, Va'ani ani ve'evyon, so la'at ve'lo ish. And maybe we don't speak Hebrew, but we just say this in the la'at ve'lo ish. The la'at of a worm, not a person. Again, we don't internalize anything, so we can go over the activities of it easily. But if you really do get into the wormwood of things, and you're a worm, or we say, Tzilat Nila, Ma'anu, Mechayenu, Mechasdeh, Ma'atzitkotenu, Ma'yishuatenu, Ma'kochenu, Ma'gvuratenu, what are we? U'motar ha'adam en ha'beimah ayin. Elokai ad shalom natsarti eni kedai v'achshav shenotsarti kilo lo natsarti ofer ani b'chayai kavachom v'mitzati hari ani lefanecha kechli malei busho chli malei. So if a person can really internalize what they're going to do, right, really, then all of a sudden he's told, sukkis is simply to be happy. Should I be happy? What's that? I'm a sinner. I have sinned. I'm going to sin. Of course, this person has a chance to re-sin all the sins beforehand. They have their mitzvah of sinning. And the Gemara in fact says, why is Sukkot called by Rishon? Because it's Rishon L'Cheshvan Avon, right at Yom Kippur. People get started right away to visit Magdimin and building themselves what to do tshuva for next year. So if I'm a Tola, what's Sukkot? What should I be happy about? And I think that this is particularly problematic. We've all done the sukkah, it's meant to commemorate Sukkot Mamash. Of course, we're all familiar with the Gemara in Sukkot that develops in the next two or three years. Machlokes is between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about whether the sukkahs commemorate the Anani HaKavod or whether they commemorate the huts that the Jews built in the desert. Now, if you commemorate the Anani HaKavod, I understand very well why there's a mitzvah to make the sukkah, because you're meant to commemorate that Hashem took care of us. But if the sukkah commemorates the huts that the Jews built, why are we commemorating the fact that we built ourselves huts? It's interesting that the kasha that the Rishonim asking where the Akiva is, how can we say we're commemorating the sukkah we built? What does the pasuk say? Why do we build the sukkah? The man yedus arotechem ki the sukkot hoshavti et bnei Yisrael. What do you mean hoshavti? We built our own sukkah. You didn't do Moshe anything. I think the explanation is very important and it holds the key for moving forward. It's very easy to believe in God when he makes Anani HaKavod. You did nothing, you're a little worm, and God made you an Anani HaKavod. The question is how you view the buildings you build. Do you view them as buildings you build and you take credit for and you agree? Or do you view that even the building you built stands because Hashem protects you? When I was a kid, I'm sure you have this in England too, we had the story of the three little pigs. Have the three little pigs? No? What's the moral of the story? That one had a strong house. If you use strong material, the harder you work, the stronger it'll be. And if you don't want the big bad wolf, you know, the terrorists to blow your house down, you have to build it out of brick. What if you build it out of iron? What if you build the World Trade Center? But no one can knock it down, right? That's why it was such a scary thing for the Western world, because we see that no matter how strong the building we build is, it's still susceptible. The lesson of Sukkot is that the strength of our building, not an Aniakam, the strength of the Sukkot Mamish we build, hinges on the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Moshe us in that system. If a person walks out of Yom Kippur and says, I am a worm and nothing is expected of me, he's not going to live his life the way he's supposed to. But if a person says, okay, that was good, now I'm back to my old self, I can do great things, and look how wonderful I am, tell him I'm a human. So, person should walk out of Yom Kippur saying, if I make mistakes, I'm a worm. If it goes to my head, my ability to go to my head, I'm a worm. As the Gemara says, if a person gets too haughty, Hashem reminds him that he created mosquitoes before he created man. Maybe God uses the mosquitoes to remind us of that. But if a person takes his ability and creates and does what Hashem wants for him and remembers and realizes that his work stands because God supports it, and then there's what to be the Sameach about. Simcha and Sukkot is supposed to be rooted in our ability to build and create and work and develop and know that Hashem's got our back, that Hashem will support and strengthen the Sukkot that we build. But of course it all hinges on our recognition of that dependency. And that's why when a person wakes up in the morning, when a person begins his day, I don't know how much it happens when you're your age. I know how much it happens when you're my age. I think it happened when I was your age too, but I mean, I'm only that one. You wake up in the morning sometimes, and it takes you a few seconds to remember who you are, or like where you are. Or like, am I late for a test? There are days I wake up now and I think I'm late for a test. I have a big test. Basically, the computer is rebooting. Or the neshama is being re-put in on the guy neshama shenatata bitahorati. And you wake up in the morning, you have no shoes on, you have no clothing on, you're not ready to function yet, except when I was in yeshiva. He was a guy who went to sleep in his clothes and insisted that we wake him up as we were walking out the door, he would walk out with us for Shabbos. I hope you guys don't do this anymore. We didn't do this with one guy. Now he's a rebbe, it's interesting now. It's a separate story. So most normal people are not wearing clothing, and they're not yet ready to function. And that's why as we go through each moment in getting ready to function, we're supposed to make a bracha. As we say in the other, Hashem pokeach ivrim, Hashem zokeach kesufim, Hashem oev tzadikim. And as the Gemara in Bracha tells us, when we die, we're supposed to bow down and raise ourselves up when we say the Shem Hashem, because Hashem raises us up. And I think that this is the symbolism of the Aravos that were Rashehen kesufim al gabi hamizbeach. What's beautiful about the Arava is that it has no airs. It doesn't strut its stuff like an Ephraim. It doesn't think it smells like a smells nice like a Hadass. It's got nothing. It can't even stand up straight. If you have, regular Arava, and not the one sold in stores, you go to some local guy who cuts in the street with permission. So you stick them in and like, that's what it was supposed to be on the Mizbeach. They are the ones chosen for the central avodah and the mikdash because Rashan Tufin Agavim. And the symbolism is obvious. In Hasidut, the Arava is symbolic of Amun of Shutu, of the direct kesher with Hashem because of the recognition of our dependence. In fact, see this connected to the pasuk of the sweetness of the kesher of the Arava with Hashem, because the Arava has no heirs. In fact, I believe this is how we can explain the concept of the hakafon that we do around the Mizbeach and the big question that we say, and the connection to Yericho. If Yerushalmi connects the hakafon to Yericho, it must be because the purpose is the same. What's the purpose of walking around the walls of Yerushalayim seven times? To get them to fall down. So for those of you who that if you want to break down walls between you and something else, you just found it, walk around it seven times. Well, clearly, that's what the Chatan is doing with the Kalat, right? There are walls that exist between people, naturally. We have a wall that we place between ourselves and everyone else. Marriage means that you're going to be totally open with this person. Break down those walls. And there are walls that exist between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our relationship with Hashem that is not received. We take the object that has the simplest, most honest, without errors, without confusion, without ability to confuse itself, without things that make it think that it's worthwhile, without its dependency on Hashem. We take it and we use it to walk around the Mizbeach seven times to hopefully break down the walls. gets highlighted even more on Rosh Hashanah. Every day they took these arovot and put them on the mizbeach. Every day they did a hafafa around the mizbeach. On Hashanah Rabbah, we put down the dalet minim. We pick up the arovot, even an arovot that has one leaf. It has just about nothing going for it. And we take this leafless arovot and walk around 7 times. And I think if we look at it in perspective, we won't understand how Hashanah Rabbah is a Yom Din. I think the answer and the explanation and the contrast is obvious. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in particular are days where we retreat from this world. On Yom Kippur, we don't eat, we don't drink, we don't do any work. There's nothing to distract us. There's nothing earthly about it. There's nothing that makes us think that we have any other purpose or any other mission on Yom Kippur. But that's easy, because there's nothing to distract us. The question is what kind of relationship we have with God when we're living normally, when we're celebrating, when we're happy, when we have seudot, when we have mitzvot to do that we think make us worthwhile. The point is to keep that mindset and to retreat on Hashanah Rabbah to the basics. And I think this accounts for the duality of Hashanah. On the one hand, it's not a yom, there's no nishanim here. It's a regular day. But it's a regular day that we try and blend, try and complement, we try and buttress with the saying of Mizmorim, with some kind of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a regular day, not in the Yom Tov. For sure not Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and not even the Yom Tov of Shmini Atzeret on the first day. One might say, bottom of page 5, that the symbolism of hanging the Arabot on the ground, we say in Tehillim, Shachar le'afar nafshenu tavkar la'aretz bitneinu, the humility that comes with that. And the next part, Kuma ezrata lanu ufneinu l'man chazecha. I think they're linked. We have a proper understanding of ourselves, we have the proper mindset of humility, then we can turn to Hashem and say, Kuma ezrata lanu ufneinu l'man. How does all this take us to Shmini Atzeret? I think that this is where it all comes around. There's a famous part of the Gra. Everybody quotes from the Gra. I'm sure you'll hear it at least 6 times on Shmini Atzeret. For years I didn't find it in print, because I never see it in print. I found it this year. We quoted by Marek Hayes. We asked Akasha on the Gra we saw earlier on Daf Nun Tes. Gra says, how do we know this didn't quote Shmini Atzeret? Because it says, V'hayita ach sameach l'rabo, to include the night after the Torah. Whereas, we know that all the ach and rachs in the Torah meant Mayim. So how can this ach include something more? So the Gra famously answers, this is also Mayim. Throughout Sukkot, we have the mitzvah Sukkot, the mitzvah Palaminim, and the mitzvah Sukkot. We have all these mitzvahs. Come Shmini Atzeret, we lose all of them, with the exception of Ve'ita Ach, the Mai Sukkot Velulav, only Sameach. What does that mean? The Tower of Yonason on the Pasuk, Midbar that introduces us to Shmini Atzeret, the Yom HaTmina, the sixth day, Shnishin Da'avim B'chetva, three, Min Metilchon Levatech, from your Sukkot to your house, you should retreat to Chetva B'chetva. Shmini Atzeret is where we hopefully take the messages of Sukkot with us from the Sukkah into the home. If Hashanah Rabbah is the way Sukkot transitions into Shmini Atzeret is the way Sukkot transitions into the rest of the year. What happens to us when we go back to our brick home? I'm not talking about the flimsy Sukkot. What happens when we get into the Three Little Pig Hall of Fame? Now we're back in the house that Ruth built. We're back in our strong homes. We have back to our regular world of parnasa and success and doing things properly and the reasons that caused us to sin in the first place. the reasons that caused us to think that we didn't have to be dependent on it for the Baruch Hu, for the Baruch Hu's will. What happens then? Are we able to take the proper Simcha back with us when everything else is falls by the wayside? Shmini Atzeret is the Yontif. That only Simcha, with nothing else, its identity as a regel b'fnei atzmo expresses itself in the fact that we don't sit in the Sukkah. In the hope that we can take Simcha, the Simcha of being reliant and connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that hopefully we feel more greatly in the Sukkah, we can hopefully take that feeling with us back into the homes we were in before Sukkot, and before Rosh Hashanah, and before Yom Kippur. And come away with something at the end of this process of Yom Tovim that was different than when we began. With a greater sense of dependency and happiness over that dependency. Chinuch explains, second source on page 6, the reason why from Shmini Atzeret we don't take the Dalet Minim is that it should be Kulo Lashem. And he quotes the Medrash of Chazal, you should stay behind with Hashem after the party is over. And that's why it's called Atzeret. Let me explain that Medrash. You guys are still young. You get invited to a wedding. How many of you have been invited to a wedding? You get invited to a wedding for the first time, or let's say even the first 10 times. Call for 5:30, I've all of a sudden you get there 5. You stay till the end. 11:30. Nothing to do anyway. You get a little older, you've been invited to hundreds of weddings. Maybe you're a rabbi, you get invited to 2 or 3 a week. You have no life. You have no life. Maybe you have dinners and bar mitzvahs. I mean, mamish, you go nuts. But, you know, people of my age and older start in our room smiling. You have to think very carefully what wedding you go to and for how long. You time your arrival and departure. And of course, if you're wise, you time that arrival and departure around some kind of food event. So either it's going to be the shmorg and the chuppah, or if you have to be there for the main event, so it's going to be the main dish. Or you have to sit there for the main event. Mamish, you have no luck. That's for the average wedding. What about the wedding of someone you're close with? Someone you really care about? You look at some of these weddings, you get the Sheva Bracha. How many people are left for Sheva Bracha? There were 600 people at the wedding. Come Sheva Bracha, there are 40 people there. Sometimes you have trouble getting a minion. But someone you care about, you're there for the Sheva Bracha, you're there to close the place. And that's what I think the Medrash means. There's this grand party with a lot of meat. Think of a smorgasbord with 70 cows. Think of the ribs you get, 70 cows. And all the nations of the world are there symbolically, and it's a big party. And then Hashem says to his children, to the Jewish people, stay one more day. Okay, what are we serving? Nothing. It's going to be a, you know, Venetian, you know, Viennese table. Strange looking fruit, you know, dipped in all kinds of stuff you don't want to eat. Right? What am I staying for? You're staying to be with me. You're staying because you're here. Because you want to be here. And no mitzvot. And no meat. Kasha life with us. And we know we're going to have to leave afterwards. But we're showing that we value the relationship as a relationship. And that's the point that I think threads what we're talking about. Sukkah is mega intensive expressions and things you can get into. Hoshana Rabbah is where it all falls away but the Arava. Hoshana. Which has a simple, straight relationship. I remember when I was your age, I was once your age, I used to take the Arava after Sukkot. You throw everything out. It's a little weird. You have lulav, you take care of, you throw it out. I will save it to, you know, mix the chametz to my friends. I would take that ruffled out, and I would paste them on the top of my bed, you know, on the wall. And I would keep as a reminder of what that rubber symbolized. You know, not to get ahead of yourself. You're at an age, you do great things. You succeed, you finish the sechta, you're smart, you're this, you're able to do that. Just to be reminded every night before you go to sleep, I'm on a rubber. And you know, this rubber would start looking pretty lame pretty quickly. First the leaves would fall off, it'd be hanging by a thread there. Because it needs work. It really is dependent on things beyond itself. And that's an important thing to remember. And so Shana Rabbah, we're meant to learn this through the Arab, and then Shini Atzeres. The question is, can we take that simcha of just the relationship with Hashem directly without anything in between? And I want to show you this concept by showing you the development of the phrase Navila ben Ismecha in Tanakh, and particularly how Chazal explained it in the Medrash. And so you think Perikuk Yudchet, we say it in Halal Oz, Makiyani Panikat Yil, Yeshua, and we end off. Zeh Yom Asa Hashem, Nagila V'Nismecha Bo. What's the Bo referring to? Chashuv Shem. What do you, how do you understand? The day. What else could it be referring to?
Hashem.
But Chashuv Shem is the day. You look in Yeshayahu. Amar v'yom ahu, hinei Elokeinu zeh, kivinu lo v'yoshiyenu, zeh Hashem, kivinu lo, nagila v'nismecha v'yishuvato. Celebrating the day when had the miracle, celebrating the Yeshua of Hashem. Then when you get the Shir Shirin, the sefer that describes the relationship in the most personal way, v'sheini acharecha v'arutza, v'yadu v'melech adarav, nagila v'nismecha v'ach. And here clearly, it's personal. Medrash brings us all together. Rabbi Avin began with the Pasuk Zayol Asa Hashem Nagilu V'Nisma Chavo. Ein Anu Yodin B'Melech Smach Im B'Yom Im L'Kodesh Baruch Hu. Ba Shlomo Pireish Nagilu V'Nisma Chavo. Bach Ba Kodesh Baruch Hu. Bach Bishuatcha. Bach Vatoratcha. Bach To be able to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Yeshua of Hashem, the Chagim of Hashem, and the Torah of Hashem. To not remain in celebrating the day of the Yeshua, but lose Hashem in the process. In fact, the Medrash continues. Tells a story, actually four of the Medrash. A couple once came to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, they were unable to have children. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said they had to get divorced. So he told them he wanted them to have a meal to celebrate their marriage. Just like they celebrated when they began their marriage, they should celebrate now when they were breaking up. So they had a meal. Chassan got a little tipsy, happy. He said to his wife, when you leave, you should please take with you whatever is most precious. You take it with you. That night when he fell asleep in his bed, the wife said to her servant, take my husband in his bed and bring it with me. Next morning, the husband woke up in the father-in-law's house. He said, what am I doing here? She said to him, you told me to take whatever's most precious to me. That's you. A couple went back to Shimon Bar Yochai, he heard this, he stopped it to them, and then they had a child. Medrash concludes and says, same thing to Jewish people. You have to be able to say to Hashem, Ein lanu chesed tov ba'ola melata. If we're able to say that Allah has come of the chama having the gilus in this book. The question is whether we can get to that. Not, I like this marriage, I like this yomtiv, I like these mitzvot, I like being a yeshiva guy, I like being someone who is good looking, or smart, or successful, whatever abilities we have. Or even I like my daughter! Most of the boys sitting here were in the top shir in their high school. Now, Baruch Hashem, they're chosh of a yeshiva. Look how great I am, and how wonderful it's good to be a, you know, a kentora. That's all it's about. Then to see through it all and to know that the one thing we value, the one thing that's precious to us, Ein L'Chevet Bo'ol HaMelech. The Zohar writes, Nagila Nismecha Bo B'Yoma, it means in the day, Bo L'Kutcha Brichu, in Hashem, Kula Chad Mila. And they're really all the same. And the question is whether we can see that they're really all the same. You know, we all talk about the Simcha and Sukkot. Spoke about this in the boys in our coastal. I don't want to, you know, drag it on too much, but we all know that the basis of the Simchon Sukkot is the Asid, you know, the gathering, the harvest, and from there, whatever we've accomplished in life. But Judaism wants to help us appreciate what we should really be happy about. we're not happy that we made $1 million this year. We're happy because we understand that whatever we've made is because Hashem is there helping us. And we're happy about the relationship that our success shows. And really, ideally, we should be happy not about the success that the relationship is behind, but the relationship itself. What's more important? What we've gained through the relationship, or the relationship? See what Yisharim says in the bottom of page 6, moving on to page 7, when a person davens, he quotes a medrash, the number one overarching emotion should be simcha. And the simcha should be Zorki HaSimcha Amitit Sheyeh Livo Shalotam Alei. Super happy. Al Shehu Zoche Lavo Lepnei Adon Yitpar Shein Kamo. The last of the Torah Zohu of its Vos of Shem HaSimcha Amitit by Yakar and its Sim. How many of us can get to the level where we feel Simcha? Not we feel responsibility and woe is done to a Jew and Shmeret is any Yid. Simcha! With Samea, because we have the great schut to be able to serve a good world. Nagila v'nismecha bach. I think that this is the platform. This is the platform that Simchat Torah is supposed to be building off of. If Shmini Atzeret is the day to celebrate the relationship with Hashem, without all the other things that can be confusing or distracting, it's understandable that Torah is going to be brought into the mix. Because Torah is the central thing we have with us all year, every day. It's the way we can connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. The question is whether we understand it that way, and whether we bring a simcha to learning it because of that understanding. Take a look at the Gemara in Titus, page 7. The Gemara there tells us that at the end of days, the Baruch will make a circle for the tzaddik. He'll sit in the middle in Gan Eden, and everyone will point with their finger and say, "Hineinu v'hineinu v'hineinu lo v'yoshkin. Ze Hashem kivinu lo nagila v'nizmecha mishpat." Let's do it. I'm going to have a word of sandwich. Soloveitchik says that this Gemara is the basis for the circle of success. During the week, it's excellent because we have the Torah on the beam of the trying to recreate them. But on this Torah, you're carrying the Torah with you. What are you dancing around? Zeh Hashem kivinu lo. We can see through the Yeshua of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and appreciate Hashem itself. And I don't think when Soloveitchik quoted this, but what we say the night we take out the Torah on Simchas Torah, we say Vayivin Torah Vayom Moshe Tum Hashem, etc. Right after we say Vayivin, we say Vayom Vayom Ahu Inei Elokim Vayom. Those who say the Lashem Yivin before the Hakafo, we say Shevekoach Hakafo Elu Tapil Chomat Arzel. I'm a second beinenu uveinecha. In case people thought that the concept of the hakafos, of the circle being to break down the walls of the Maimon Shagat, this is albeit only on Simchas Torah. I'm not talking about Hoshana Rabbah or during circle. But here by Simchas Torah, you see it now in the Shem Yichud, we say it. V'niye mukafe mi Torah u'mitzvah b'vayu mitzvah. What a beautiful imagery. V'nidave b'cha u'v'toratcha tamid anachim v'krim. And I think that this is this concept that we're meant to be expressing with the Kriyat HaTorah of Simchat Torah. We begin with Zot HaBracha Hashem Rachma Shesh, I read it today, Yisrael, and say, "Well, Brachos begin with the whole introduction of Hashem, Yisrael, God of Adar, Yisrael, Achmo Vivamim, Moshe." Before we get to the Brachos of Mishpatim, we have to explain. Rashi explains, "Pata Tehila V'Shifo Shalmakom." Moshe began with the Shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'acharkach patach v'tzarcheim shel Yisrael. And then he spoke about the needs of the Jewish people. V'shevach shepatach bo, and the Shevach he begins with. Yesh bo atzkarat chut li'Yisrael. There's some kind of mentioning of the zechuyot that the Jewish people have as a basis for these brachos. The Chol Baderach Ritzui, whom Moshe is mentioning, is a way of creating Russell with Hashem, Klomar, Kedayim Elu Shetavla Leher Baruch. Moshe, says Rashi, begins with these psukim before the Baruch, as a tefillah to Hashem, as the basis for them receiving the Baruch. What's the basis? Rashi continues and he explains, and when Hashem came to Har Sinai, they came out, Kishabo, Yatsev, Tafitahar, they came out and stood at attention at the bottom of the mountain, the Jews came out. And they continued, it says, Ab Chobe Bamim, even when Hashem shows love for other nations, Kol Kadosh Biya Zacho, your holy ones remain in your hands, the Hem Tukudrag Lacha, they're committed at your feet. Rashi explains, they committed themselves at the foot of the mountain of Arsina, and later on he goes on to explain that no matter what happens throughout the Golas, the Jews show their commitment. Rashi explains on Pasadalit, it's a Morasha that Achaznua Balona Asvena, that we hold on to tightly and we do not let go of. The Svurdo explains the Behem Tukul the Raglech a little differently. Not the committed, we certainly show through Torah, but it's Falalu Baruch Nishbara. We daven with a broken spirit, with a spirit that expresses our recognition of our dependency on Hashem. Simcha Torah is meant to be the time where we use the Torah to continue the tradition of Jewish people, commitment to the Torah, to Hashem through the Torah, through the Tefillah, in all kinds of circumstances. And not only the commitment, but the simcha the Jews have had with this commitment, without this commitment. To summarize it and put together, I believe that Hoshana Rabbah is not just coincidentally the day before Shmini Atzeret / Simchat Torah. It's the day that's meant to help us transition from the Kol to Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah, by helping us focus in the simcha on what it should really be about, which is nothing more and nothing less than the great chut we have to have a relationship with Hashem. And that's why we drop everything but the Arava on the Yom Hoshana, the Yom Arava, when it falls in the Mishnah, because the Arava has nothing else it could possibly be about but that. Shmini Atzeret is where Vayita Ach Sameach, we lose all the other mitzvot. But taking Simcha with us from the sukkah into the house. Shmini Atzeret is the time when we should be focused on the Simcha of Bach beyond the Yeshua, beyond the Yom Le'asa Hashem. But rather, Zeh Hashem Tivinu Lo Yoshiyim. And the linkage of Simchat Torah Shmini Atzeret is to help us see the Torah as expressive of that relationship and as the mechanism we're meant to use for that relationship. People who have put to learn for the year, for sure to learn the Eretz Yisrael, and it's even more important that we make sure to define what our Limud HaTorah this year and in the future are going to mean to us. Is it going to be a way to strengthen our skills? Is it going to be a way even to strengthen our observance? These are those things that are small matters that are important. Is it going to be a way to build our ideas? I'm going to know more. Even just a way to build our identity as a Ben Torah, which again is not a small matter. Very important. Or is it going to be something that we learn to associate with the Nosen Torah? And I believe that that's a central part of Simchat Torah on Shmini Atzeret as opposed to Shavuot. On Shavuot we learn to celebrate the fact that it is something that we see. Simchat Torah coming together with Shmini Atzeret means we don't learn on Simchat Torah. But we revel in it. We relish the schut of being able to have God's Torah and connect to Him through it. And when you dancing wherever you are tomorrow night. You should think a lot about it. Simchat Torah is always the greatest day, whatever yeshiva, all the yeshiva, to see the simcha that Rabbanim and people have been learning for a long time have over what they feel is the special school to be the Amat Torah. I want to conclude with a story that happened not that far from here. Some more than 50 years ago. There was a rabbi who recently passed away. His name was Minahar. His daughter lives across the street from here. She didn't tell me the story that I read. 1948, when the Arabs were closing in on the Jewish quarter. Nobody knew what was going to happen when they finally took over the Jewish quarter. They assumed there would be murder and massacre like several other places. He took his daughter to the side and he said to them, "I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to survive. I don't know if you're going to survive. But I have one request of you. One piece of advice to you. The most important thing you can do with your life is marry someone who learns Torah." What kind of statement that is? This is what a father has on his mind in his last moment. Well, honestly, you'll marry someone who learns Torah. That's what we do here. That's the most important thing. Rosh Hashanah survived. He became drunk by his son. He was by his son. There's so many stories like this. Those who are going to be around Yerushalayim, Simchat Torah, I highly recommend coming back here tomorrow, beginning of Simchat Torah Adari, and speaks in the transition from Sukkot to Simchat Torah, when he tells stories like in the Holocaust and other places. People, Mesirat Nefesh for Torah, that could only come from the appreciation of Torah as being unborn, as being our connection to other people. And the sad part of our lives is that because we live in a world where we're exposed to so much knowledge, so many ideas, so many books, so many things, that in the end the uniqueness, the special footing, beauty of the Torah as God's book gets worn away. One of the reasons the Yeshiva Shevel want to study Maz, they don't want to study anything else. It's because there can't be Torah of there anything. As soon as there's Torah of there anything, so even if you say Torah is here, that's here, so okay, you know, I'm saying Torah will do that. There's nothing else that's a valid, only what Hashem did. So most of us sitting here, are subject to that's not true. We believe in a lot of nothing. God expresses himself through the wisdom of the world. God gives man the ability to understand things and write books about that we should study and understand and appreciate. And we can see God not only through this world, but through the world and through Rhea and through man. The question is whether that added value causes us to forget how otherworldly and special, how lucky we are to be the nation of Hashem who are given his Torah. And maybe it's even more important for us to celebrate Simchat Torah. Because people who have nothing else, they know it's all we have. We who are exposed to other things, who may value other things, we need to make sure that we understand, we assert for ourselves, express and concretize for ourselves. How Nagila v'nismach avoch, how the Torah is Torah Hashem, how lucky and happy we are to be able to study it and connect to Hashem through it, and hopefully we can take that with us through the year, through this year, and through many years. We'll have a little break now before Rabbi Zimmerman is giving the shir at 11 o'clock. Those will sing a few songs that have to do with what I was just speaking about. It's mutter to sing. Anyone doesn't want to sing, there's food outside. Or even if you want to sing, but you want to get food, you can get food. There's food in there. I didn't start this show at 11 o'clock. I want to formally welcome all those who came.